You know, some people enjoy composing their own music, chord by chord, and others are happiest when they come across that one perfect song. Work is not a lot different than that. Whether you prefer building your own workflow or using a pre-made template, with Monday.com, you and the team can work in a way that's comfortable for everyone. Tap the banner to go to Monday.com and build your own amazing workflow, or find an awesome template. No judgment.
Hi folks, be sure to visit my website at dr-history.com for a short personal video message, to listen to the latest stories, and to leave a comment.
And now, Dr. History, that's right.
Happy 4th of July, Zeb.
You know, I'm really looking forward to a great Independence Day weekend.
I love it.
I am.
I do too.
I'm looking forward to being with my family. I'm looking forward to being like a little kid with the sparklers and whatever else might go bang and fizz or whatever.
I've got all 6 of my kids and their spouses and my grandkids, so we're going to have 28 people.
Really?
At my house this week, yeah.
Are you going to have fireworks?
Oh, sure. Yeah, we'll probably have some. And then we're going to go over to the Rupert fireworks and watch that, Thursday night?
Thursday night, yeah.
So it's
28 people.
Yeah.
And little kids with sparklers.
Yeah. What could go wrong there?
And the fire department on call.
What could possibly go wrong?
What are we going to talk about?
We're going to talk about the robbery at the Denver Mint. But I need to, a good friend of ours, the Schnitzelflüster.
Oh, my goodness.
He's back. And
Budweiser Schnitzelflüster.
Schnitzelflüster. He suggested we do a show about bells. And he sent me some information about, like, fire bells that they used to have in the towns and stuff.
Oh.
So
I thought you were talking about my family.
No. Oh. No. Now, that would be an interesting story, but...
Well, we can't put that one on the air.
Okay. So, here we go. This is...
Mr. Schnitzelflüster, thank you.
Thank you very much. So, Jim Clark made off with nearly $37,000 from the U.S. Branch Mint in Denver, and no one was more surprised than a guy named George Lane, who was the superintendent. And George Lane didn't go out on the town at night. He didn't have much extracurricular activities, and he totally trusted his clerk, this Jim Clark, which led to the theft.
Oh.
Now, I'm going to show you a picture of the Denver Mint back then. See that, Zeb? It's really not much.
Well,
it's,
I have been to the Denver Mint.
Have you?
Yeah.
Oh, okay. So that's just back in 1836, so not much there. But anyway, on February 16th, 1864, the Rocky Mountain News referred to the robbery as the, quote, fatal step which strikes deeply into the finances of the U.S. Treasury and one of the most serious, strange events in our country's history. Well, the Mint that time was no more than an assay office which received and refined gold into ingots. So it really didn't do a lot. But anyway, so this Jim Clark, James D. Clark, he was 21 years old and just kind of a short guy from Pennsylvania. He was hired after being recommended. He possessed all the qualities that you'd hope for in a young man. He had character, education, appearance, popularity. His salary was $1,800 a year, which at that time was actually pretty good for anybody. But as the old saying goes, some people just can't stand prosperity.
Right.
So $1,800, I did some figuring, and today's money, it would be 23 times that. So it would be, well, like about $40,000, $45,000 a year.
Wow.
Yeah, so that's, you know, not bad. But Jim had a little issue with gambling and drinking and partying, and this has added up to a severe strain on Clark's finances.
I see.
And in order to maintain his newly acquired high standard of living, he dipped into the resources of the Mint.
You know, do they check these people every night before they leave?
No. So he tried to recoup his gambling debts. But within six weeks, he was in so deep that he decided the easiest way out would be to take off without leaving a forwarding address.
Uh-huh.
Right? Got the picture here.
I do.
After making that decision, he did some fast thinking and concluded that he might as well up the ante, which turned out to be $37,000, and make his flight a good proposition. And I figured that out. That's $854,000. In today's money.
In today's money.
Yeah. So $37,000.
But I've often wondered about sticky fingers working at the Mint.
Well, that's a good, you know, I guess they just trusted these guys. You know,
well,
he came,
I guess.
He was highly recommended, and they thought he was a good, honest guy. So here we go. On Saturday the 18th, Clark left the Mint as usual, but he came back to his office after supper. He was seen by the watchman and a messenger, but nothing was thought of it because he often did that. It was assumed later that he had collected the treasury notes, gold coins, and a gold bar during the day and put them in his desk. And upon his return, he placed the loot on the windowsill and propped the window open with a pencil.
This guy was pretty sharp,
yeah,
really.
Yeah, he was. So the superintendent, Lane, was actually in the next room with an open door between him and Clark, who had worked quietly all the time. And anyway, Clark slipped out, picked up his haul without the superintendent ever knowing he'd been there. So he came in and out after dinner in the evening, and Lane never didn't know anything that was going on. So Clark, the pay clerk, as he frequently did, had engaged a saddle horse for the weekend to ride out to visit an uncle who lived southeast of Denver. Now, after his sudden change in plans, he loaded up with two Navy pistols, a revolver, two saddlebags, and a pair of spurs. He made good use of one of the bags by stuffing the notes into it and sewing it up later. And being a friend of the stable owner, Clark left him $200, figuring it would be enough to pay for the horse because he wasn't going to bring it back.
I didn't think so.
No. So by leaving the money, he also eliminated the possibility of being lynched for a horse thief if he were ever caught.
Yeah.
So he was thinking ahead.
So he paid for it.
Yeah, he was thinking ahead.
Okay.
So Jim Clark took off along the place called Cherry Creek. I don't know if you've heard of that, out of Denver or something like that. I'm not sure. It must be a small place.
Okay.
But he breezed right past his uncle's house without stopping.
And he had all the money with him.
Yeah, he had everything in the saddlebags, everything, all the money. So later on, when he reached unfamiliar country, he got lost.
Uh-oh.
And wandered about until he came upon a charcoal burner. I guess that's the guy that's burning charcoal to sell. So Clark, being cold and tired, gave the man $2.50 to keep his fire going until morning. Well, by sunup, he was pretty well thawed out, and continued on until he came to the home of a guy named William Maines. So remember that name. We're going to talk about him quite a bit. So Clark told him that he wanted to steer clear of the U.S. military authorities because a commission was waiting for him in the Mexican army. In other words, he was going to go to Mexico and fight for Mexico. That's what he told this guy, Maines.
He'd have been better off saying nothing.
Yeah, probably, really. But he wanted to avoid any military or any authorities.
Okay.
So this Maines agreed to guide him by a roundabout way to the Arkansas River for $200.
Uh-huh.
Well, interesting enough, the tenderfoot, Clark, found horseback riding a little bit hard going. And so by Monday afternoon, they stopped for a while at a sawmill. Before leaving the main traveled road, he and Maine spent the night at a cattle camp where the herder, a guy named Evans, directed them to a permanent camp on Chico Creek, some 65 miles to the south of Denver.
Uh-oh.
Chico Creek.
Yeah.
Now, because of the fog, they got a late start on Tuesday, but by traveling late, they reached the divide that separates the watersheds of the South Platte and the Arkansas Rivers. And this section, about 50 miles south of Denver, has long been kind of notorious for its sudden fierce storms. Well, as luck would have it, a heavy snow was already falling when they made camp. And after tying the horses together, they thoughtlessly turned them loose. Now,
these weren't the brightest lights in the fixture.
A greenhorn like Clark might be excused for doing something like that. Okay,
yeah.
But Maines should have known better.
Absolutely,
he was a horse guy.
Yeah.
Well, that was the last time. That was the last they ever saw of their horses.
So there they are.
They're camped. They've got the saddles, the gear. Everything.
But they still got the money.
Yeah, and no horses.
Right.
So Maines tried to track down the horses the next morning, but he gave up. And then the men stashed everything but the revolver, some food, and the valuable saddlebag, and they set out on foot.
Now, let me ask you a question. Did Maines know that there was gold and all that type of thing?
I don't know. That's a good question. I don't know if he confided that to him or not. I don't think he did. Huh. So I think Maines was just trying to guide him, you know, to safety, I guess.
I see.
But they left the saddles and everything else there. So evidently they were better hikers than horsemen, because Clark figured they covered about 25 miles before stopping at a settlement for the night. Now, the next morning, Thursday morning, Clark, by now his feet must have been pretty sore, offered $100 for an ox team to haul them onto the Arkansas River. Anyway, he didn't get any takers, and he did the next best thing. He bought a pony for $60.
A pony?
A pony.
A pony.
It says a pony. So I'm thinking, you know, are we talking Shetland?
Yeah.
You know, what are we talking here? Yeah. Anyway, so with, and Maines is still with him. So
this is not following right.
Yeah, I'm not sure why he, anyway, but he is. So with one riding and the other walking, he and Maine set out eastward for Chico Creek. When they reached the cattle camp that afternoon, Clark was almost within sight of the river, which was his goal. And with his chances of getting home free, it became better with each mile. He figured he was in pretty good shape. Meanwhile, back at the Mint, back home, it had not been discovered until Monday morning, which, with Clark missing and the money gone, didn't take much imagination to connect one with the other, and a reward of $1,000 was posted for the return of Clark and his loot, and descriptions were given of Clark, and the description would fit about anybody almost, but then they had a description of the horse. Was a long-tailed roan, blind in one eye. So that was the horse he was riding.
Yeah, okay.
And this was sent to the authorities all over the region. There was nothing to go on as to which direction they had taken out of town. So they didn't know which way they'd gone.
Okay, so they sent an APB on a blind-eyed horse.
Horse, yes. And a guy on it.
Well, he was.
He was, for a while. So Superintendent Lane had a son named Amos, and a friend of his named William Crocker. They rented a two-horse rig and set out after the robbers.
In a buggy.
In a buggy. Because now there's $1,000 rewards.
Oh.
So, again, snow. This must have been in the winter. Snow was falling when they reached the sawmill where Clark had stopped for a little while. And there they heard about his hiring of Maines and also the cooked-up story about the Mexican Army Commission. Well, Amos decided at that point to return to Denver. He didn't know, you know, if he was on the right track or not, because it'd be too difficult to trace anyone in this open country. Well, that night, however, they met Evans, who told them that the two had stayed at his camp some 25 miles to the south on Monday night, and that he had directed them to the cattle camp on Chico Creek. So now they had an idea. They had an idea that they were headed to this place called Chico Creek. So Amos and his buddy now had a direction to go.
And I still have the question that I've asked you. Can I just ask this,
sure,
or don't you have enough time?
No, go ahead.
In the old days, when you say over on Chico Creek, and you point in a direction, how did they ever find what they were looking for?
Great question. And I guess, you know, there were landmarks, you know, like such and such mountain, such and such butte, or...
Yeah, but you might miss them.
True, yeah. You know, I've always wondered how some of those guys, the mountain men especially, made it through places like Island Park, where you get into those trees, you don't know which way you're going.
There you go.
Anyway, so Amos and his buddy, with knowledge then of Clark's destination, they forgot about returning to Denver and resumed their traveling early Thursday morning. They crossed the divide during the mountain during the morning, traveling by the most direct route, and they reached the El Paso Post Office Station, a distance of 65 miles, by nightfall. At this point, they were but a few hours behind the embezzler and their $1,000 reward, which, as I mentioned, in today's money would be about $23,000, $25,000. $1,000 reward.
Yeah.
So anyway, during the evening, the sheriff of El Paso County strayed in from the south and told of hearing about two strangers who had tried to hire a team to go back and get some abandoned saddles. So evidently, Cook and Maines wanted to go back and get the saddles.
And the saddlebags.
Well, no, they had the gold. They had all the treasure with him. He was carrying that. But I guess they wanted to go back, I don't know why, to get the saddles. But anyway, the next morning, they borrowed two saddles. This is Amos and his buddy. And mounting their buggy horses, start out accompanied by the sheriff. When they reached the cattle camp, they surprised Clark and Maines, eating a leisurely breakfast with the herders. And although the young man still had his revolver, he offered no resistance. Instead, he appeared to be relieved that it was all over. So he was caught. Just that easy.
Really?
By Amos and his buddy and the sheriff.
Amos's brother's name wasn't Andy, was it?
No.
Oh, okay.
No, it's
right.
Not his brother. It's his buddy, William. William.
And that was the end?
No. Oh, no, we're not done.
Oh.
We still got a little more to go here.
I'm sorry. I apologize.
Okay, so the party, including the sheriff, then began the trip back to Denver.
Okay, now they're going back.
Now they're going back.
And they're going to ride by the saddles.
Maybe. I'm not sure. Anyway, they made it to the Mint in Denver on Sunday afternoon, and this kind of was the end of a really pretty tough week for Clark the robber.
Yeah.
I mean,
really?
He'd been cold.
Poor guy.
Tried to ride a horse, which he obviously didn't
have done much. He was chafed.
Yes, he was. Now, Clark still had about $29,000 in notes and gold coins, but he didn't have the gold bar. Remember, he had stolen a gold bar.
That had to be heavy carrying.
Yeah, yeah. But he had no idea what had happened to it, but remembered changing it from one position on his saddle to another after leaving Denver. And he thought it might have been lost in the storm or left with the saddles. He didn't know what happened to it. Well, with several thousand dollars as well as the bar still missing, Maines and two others, one a deputy marshal, were sent to bring in the saddles. Well, Maines had no trouble finding the place where they had been left, but someone else had beaten them to it and had taken the saddles and maybe the gold bar, they thought.
Uh-huh.
Now, that's not the end of it.
I didn't think so.
The gold bar, nevertheless, did turn up later in kind of an unexpected manner. On the morning after the robbery, two young guys were out walking and found it a short distance out of town, out of Denver.
We lost it way back there?
Yeah. So they banged up the mint marks on the gold because, you know, they always marked them with some kind of marking like the Denver Mint, maybe date or whatever.
Yeah.
So they banged it all up. Then they sawed it in half. One of them took his half to Central City, a mining town west of Denver, and he sold it to a bank. When the banker tried to deposit it at the mint, then it was recognized, and the other half was recovered when they rounded up the two guys that had the gold bars. So now they had the sawn in half gold bar. Okay,
you're losing me somewhat, but go ahead.
The gold bar was recovered.
Yeah.
We'll just put it that way.
Yeah.
By two guys who had found it, cut it in half, tried to sell it.
And then they were crooks, too.
Well, they were finders. And, you know,
but they didn't get prosecuted?
No.
But isn't that federal property?
Well, they just found it, Zeb. And,
and then they cut it in half.
They cut it in half. You know, what are you going to do? You know, half a gold bar.
I'm going to go find my saddle.
Okay. Well, with the return of the bar, the loss was cut to about $4,500. Amos Lane passed up his third of the share of the reward because his father, the superintendent, was stuck for what was lost. So the superintendent had to make up for the loss of what Clark had stolen. So his son decided, okay, he wouldn't take.
So dad was on the hook.
Yeah.
For Clark taking the money.
Yeah. Yep. Well, Clark was charged with embezzlement and larceny and tossed into jail, but he escaped 6 weeks later.
Here we go again.
After hiding around town for a couple of weeks.
Got to find the saddle.
During which his friends supplied him with everything he needed, including liquor. He again pulled out, but this time toward the north and on foot. I guess he decided riding a horse wasn't his thing. He took a job as a stock tender on a ranch about 70 miles from Denver, but was soon spotted by a lawman and returned to jail.
Now, wait a minute. Let's back up the bus. We got a minute left. Clark is released.
No, he's in jail.
Oh, he escaped.
Yeah, he escaped.
And he had friends that supplied him.
Yeah.
Okay.
Then he took off.
And he walked.
He walked to a ranch. Got a job.
Not a smart guy. In the wintertime.
Yeah. Got a job. But a sheriff or a deputy saw him and recognized him. And so he went back to jail.
And nothing happened to Amos and Andy.
Amos? No, that was the son. He just...
Well, there's two of them, though.
Yeah, Amos and William.
Oh, William. I forgot.
Yeah. Yeah. No, they were fine because they had actually helped arrest the guy.
And what about the father that was being held accountable?
He had to come up with the money for the loss.
And how much was the loss?
We don't know for sure. We figured there was $37,000, and so the loss was about $4,500. So that would still be like $45,000, $50,000.
Okay, you know I'm going to ask what happened to Maines.
He just kind of drifted around and...
You're making this up.
You're right. He just went back home and continued doing whatever it was.
But he was part of the guilty...
Sort of. Yeah, he sort of was. But we still don't know if Clark told him about the robbery. Maybe he didn't. Maybe he just said, oh, yeah, this is some money I earned. Whatever. So
there's a lot of loose ends there, buddy.
There is.
That's a good story. We got to tell that one again, only slower.
So, I tried to go slow, Zeb. But anyway, that's all the story of the robbery at the Denver Mint. But,
there you go. Okay. Ladies and gentlemen, he did it again, as he always does, Dr. History.